Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we're grateful for all of our listening audience, those of you who will join us tonight, who have joined us in the past, and have yet to join us. Listen after the show is over, either on Facebook Live or the Blog Talk Radio platform. Greetings and welcome. The show is sponsored by Building Families and Communities Institute, and we welcome you to give us a call and share your meaningful dialogue at 657-383-0944. Again, that number in the live studio is 657-383-0944. All right. I realize that some of our Facebook followers have had issues connecting with us, but I hope that's straightened out. Nonetheless, feel free to get with it. You can email, shoot me an email if you have some questions specifically or concerns, institute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com. All right. Quite often we find ourselves hiding things that frighten us, cause us to be unnerved, or even frustrate us. These things are hidden from others, but they shape and direct our motives. They tend to manifest themselves, however, in some of the oddest ways at the most inopportune times. Far too long, good people have lived behind the shadows of their potential, afraid to step out because they're concerned of what others may think about them if they will fail, the risk that are associated with taking a chance. Some people call this Pandora's box. Leave that stuff right there. Don't bother that. Don't ask no questions. Don't shake it. Don't rub the genie bottle because you don't want nothing to come out of it. Nothing to come out of there. Well, the truth of the matter is, as I said earlier, it comes out. It manifests itself in aspects of our lives. And oftentimes when we're not ready for it to. As a scriptural text, it says, what's done in thou will come to light. That's altruistic. This is the motivation to strive to do right and not to say or do anything that you'd be ashamed of. You know, a lot of politicians, now more than ever, preachers are being caught up because they have double lies, it appears. Their actions tend to come back and haunt them. Nonetheless, we find ourselves in this predicament right now where in 2021, as we move forward, we focused a great deal on young people. I love our elders and our brothers and sisters and our peer group. However, beloved, the reality is that we've got to get on that way. And if we really care about the condition and the status and the direction and trajectory of our young folks that are behind us, we ought to pause and position ourselves to teach them, to encourage them, not to blow smoke at them, not to lie to them, cuddle them, but to teach and love them, encourage them to do what is right, what is profitable for reproof and beneficial to the long-term success. Join me tonight as we talk from the topic. Come on out, whoever you are. Come on out. Come out of there, whoever you are. Come out of where, Doctor? Come out of where? The text in 2 Timothy, 1st chapter, verses 6 and 7, very simply reads like this. Wherefore, in remembrance, that thou stir up the gift of God, which is in thee, by the putting on of hands. Verse 7 says, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind. Watch this. Is the power of the text right here. If you are mindful, you don't have to hide. You don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be timid. And don't have to listen to nobody else. Why? Because there is a gift from the creator of the universe endowed within you. Man didn't give that to you, so he can't take it away from you. Do you have to realize that? Must you work to perfect that? Absolutely. But it's in you. The next verse tells us that you don't have to be afraid because you weren't given a spirit of fear with that gift. But that gift comes with power, it comes with love, and sound mind. I can think of a few scenarios as we wrap up our monologue for tonight that have significance to where we are today. One is people who for years found themselves struggling mentally, psychologically. Yes, some of them are diagnosed with mental health issues, and they have clinical diagnosis that says that without treatment, they will continue to suffer. But then there are those who go undiagnosed. They suffer too. And guess what? They cause other people to suffer. And when that issue that is plaguing them, that has plagued them, albeit privately before they came out into the public sector, before they got big enough for society to say, we don't accept certain behaviors from you, and therefore we will call the law on you, or we will put you out of certain environments and places. Even churches are putting folk out. Yeah, when they don't act right. You understand what I'm saying? Public facilities like libraries, schools are banning folks from them because of their behavior. Something that has been unaddressed for a long time. And we saw a lot of this over the last 7-10 years across America. Oh, what we do is code it as black-owned police brutality. We code it as unfair treatment of black people. Well, beloved, consider this. Consider this. I'm not asking you to accept it, but I'm asking you to consider this. A lot of what we've seen are issues that have been swept under the carpet, ignored, not dealt with, that have come to fruition for chronologically grown individuals who are out in public places And you know, I don't care if you're black. You don't, and you live in a impoverished neighborhood, an urban American city or a neighborhood or community. You don't, it's not fair for you to have to suffer certain negative things, violence, and disrespect, and trashing it. That's not fair for you to have to do that. You work hard, and you should be able to live among your own people. Let's be very clear. But the reality is some of our brothers and sisters need help. And the only way we can help them is to tell them the truth. Come out, whoever you are. Let's face this thing. That's the way urban America is going to improve and turn around if gentrification don't fully wipe you out of it. So y'all walking with me. Stay with me now. Stay with me now. Oh, we're gonna, I'm going to give you a chance to talk to me about it. We got an hour and a half tonight. We'll give you a chance to talk to me about it. That's just one issue of undiagnosed mental health issues, illnesses. Now, I'm not a clinician. I'm a social scientist. I'm not a clinical psychologist or scientist. I'm a social scientist. However, I'm well endowed or embraced enough on the research to understand these implications and how they affect what we see right now. And we tend to ignore and accept as normal. Okay? Then there are people who are economically and socially, not that they're bad people, but they're economically and socially paralyzed. What do you mean by that, Dr.? They can't seem to get in a position to control the finances of their lives. Socially, their education is poor, and they challenge with reading issues and literacy and numeracy issues and what have you because of failed education, oftentimes, most of the time, public education. They are paralyzed in society, stuck, can't see themselves going. And it's not just black people that this happens to. There are many Caucasians who find themselves forced to accept the same plight that African Americans in urban cities face. Why? Is it because of who they are? Or they were born? No. It's the social condition and circumstance. But they're paralyzed. Come out, whoever you are. Let's talk about it. How do we break that cycle? Who is it that we turn to for answers? All right? You got people who have mental health issues, then those who are socially, economically paralyzed. This is the part that gets me right here. This is the part that gets me. It's folk who literally are blind. They walking, it look like their eyes are wide open. But they're blind to certain realities. And I would submit to you oftentimes it's not because anybody's forcing them to be, but they chose not to know the truth. You heard the text, you shall know the truth, and the truth of what? Make you free. When you don't want to know the truth about who you are, where you are, and what your circumstances are, guess what? You will have to face that truth at some point. Yep. The other night, some was suggesting, don't forget about the old people that are struggling, having a hard time. Don't forget about them. They need help too. Yes, everyone can use help from time to time. I certainly can. You understand what I'm saying? But then there are those of us who chose to do as we, and now we must live with the consequences of our actions. We made our bed the way we did, and we got to lay in that bed now. Blind. Come out. Whoever you are. Then lastly, there are young ladies and young males who are sick. Desperately looking for love in all the wrong places, trying to find validation, trying to find hope, trying to uplift themselves. trying to be important. They want to look pretty. What? They want to look pretty. They want to look handsome. They want to look good. They want to be balling and shot calling, as some would say. You understand what I'm saying? What's the problem? What's the problem? You know, there are vultures out there every day. They're seeking the weak, feeble, the unsure mind to attack so that they can manipulate them, abuse and use them. Oh, yeah. Trust me. And we used to just talk about this in the world. But, beloved, let's tell the truth. Come on out, wherever you are. Tell the truth. Unfortunately, the one place, and I can say this as a minister of the gospel, as a pastor for the last 25 years or better, the one place historically, this for black and white, you should be encouraged and able to stand up and speak the truth no matter how it hurts who. That one place now is the one place people get up and they'll start lying and they'll look around to see if they got support from anybody to support them in telling it like it is. You ought to be able to tell the truth openly and honestly without concern or fear or reprisal. But even the church has created a culture where people will lie, help me, Holy Ghost, just to protect their image, to protect their relationships. Oh, just like these little young people who are sick, who are lost, looking for some place, something. But interestingly enough, in the last year, what has happened is that some people realize that I don't necessarily have to go to church to get that. I don't necessarily have to be in the church to get that. Wait a minute. Some folks realize, especially young folks and old people as well, who have, I don't think it was intentional, but by, in effect, an outcome, they've been brushed aside. We should never, I say we, should never have been in a position where we didn't run to the aid. I don't care what kind of condition was going on in the country. We didn't run to the aid and assistance, particularly of our old. You know the story. Y'all know the story. Come on out, whoever you are. It don't matter who you are, what you look like. Come on out. Let's talk about it. Because you can stop hiding now. The cover is off. The gig is up. The gig is up. You listen to Talk Strength. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Docker. And tonight we're speaking from the topic, come on out, whoever you are. Did I call any names? Speaking to the behavior and the mentality tonight. Just come on out. Willie Neil Johnson in the keynote had a song. And we had as a guest on our show a couple of years ago, this brother who sang, Teddy Cross. And this was one of his songs that he sang with the gospel keynotes. Just for a second. You listen to Talk Street. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Jesus Dobby. Listen to it just for a second. You got a witness there. Where you been, Ted? Now my soul is clean. And with God, I'm satisfied. What about that 36:51? Ain't that reason to come on out? 36:51? Welcome to Talk Street. Can you hear me, 3361? All right. I got you on the line there. I'm not sure what's going on. Let's see if we can get him right here. We're listening at 3661. Looks like I got him in the studio. You all give us a call here, 657-383-0944. And this is Talk Straight. This is Talk Straight, and we'll talk from the topic. Come on out, whoever you are. 3661, 615-3661. Can you hear me? Holler if you hear me. Okay. I'm not sure what your phone may be muted. If you will consider unmuting your phone, and we'll wait.
It was. I hear you loud and clear.
Okay. Everything good, man? Everything good?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. You ready to
yes,
come out?
Sir.
Hiding.
Hey, I'm out here, man. I've been out here, man.
Don't say it like okay, all right. Well, that's what we talked about tonight, brother, is the need for people to realize that it don't matter who you are, where you come from, what you do, what your title is, your education, how much money you get. Come on out. Come away from behind the closet, man. You understand what I'm saying? And come on out here where everybody can. What do you think about that? What's your thought on that?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, man. You said social engineering, man. Social engineering got us so twisted. We got women want to fight a man over their powers. Man want to fight women over his powers, and it's all confusing. Some people feel like they got a certain title in life that put them over people. Some people, you know, feel as they can talk a certain particular way or use a certain diction that makes them intelligent. It's all wound up. It's just kind of crazy out here, man. And I think that's what leads to young folks feeling like they have to validate themselves by the type of brand of clothing that they wear or,
correct,
you know, what they got on. That false sense of identity. Because when you take it all off, man, you still got what you got there. You know,
you know, you're saying something. You're saying something, and I have noticed that you work with young people for years. It's the nature of rebellion. When
mm-hmm.
the young can see the insincerity of the examples before them, right? They can't always
participate.
Yes. Always. And then we say to them, you ought to respect your elders and do like they tell you. But yet they see subtly, I'm going to say us, okay? I'll put myself in there. I try to do right, but I'm going to put myself in there. I'm going to say us. They see us cutting corners, telling the white lies. You understand what I'm saying? And cheating ourselves because we're hiding somewhere. It's interesting, man. COVID really brought to light a lot of people and a lot of entities, a lot of groups and organizations. It really told us what their mind was, what their real faith was, what their strength was. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And young people have been watching this for decades, and we wonder why they tend to be rebellious. Well, it's real simple. It's the same thing for my children or your children. If we fail to be the light, to be the judge, the jury, and the executor in their life, guess what? Yes, they are likely to be subject to social demise and issues and things of that nature. Let me shut up. What do you think about that, big brother?
Well, if you're gonna talk it, you got to walk it. And what's funny to me is young people say you're trying to judge me, and I teach my children that you need to judge people and judge. I can't put you in heaven or hell, but I could pass some kind of discernment, which is judgment, on your behavior to say I don't want to be around that.
Right.
You need to start using some kind of judgment. And I try to get my children to understand that it's okay to judge.
Okay.
But don't be a fool in your judgment. You know, if you're gonna judge, you gotta put it all out there, and make a wise decision on what's all out there. Don't, like you say, you know, some people want to, you know, tell white lies, or, you know, a lie is a lie.
Look, if you tell a lie, you tell a lie. I don't care how big.
A lie is a lie, and we find different reasons to justify the lie.
Sure.
And I'm guilty of it, and you know, I'm learning to, it's best to go ahead and deal with, go and tell the truth, because when you put the truth up front, you don't have to keep lying.
And what I be telling the child, look here, man, go ahead, bust your sweat, do it right the first time, and you ain't got to keep going back and covering nothing up. You know what I mean?
Nah.
You can stand on the factual basis of what you've done that was right and say, I've done just like I was supposed to. And that's the way I want to meet him, Pastor Waller. I want to see him in that great getting up morning. I want to look the Savior in the eye like a grown man and tell him I ain't begging to get into the kingdom. I earned my way. I sent up my timber a long time ago. You understand what I'm saying, Pastor?
Yeah.
Huh? I want to look in the eye and say, look, you promised me. Huh? And I paid my dues.
Definitely.
I didn't come to preach, man, but I feel my help right there.
Yes, sir.
I mean, you know, and then you ain't got to be coward about it. You understand what I'm saying? Male or female, you ain't got to be coward about what you, if it's who you are and you're true to it, what you got to hide for? Why you gotta go ducking, shucking, jazz? No, stand on it. If you're ashamed of it, don't do it. Wait a minute. If you're ashamed of it, don't do it. You're listening to Talk Straight. Come on out. Whoever you are. A brother out of New Orleans is joining us. 4756. That's our topic tonight, my brother. What say you?
I was listening to the president's speech, and I heard you say, come on out, wherever you are, so I had to call in.
There's some people had, Brother Warren. Now, I'm talking about me first now. Let's break straight with this thing. But ain't no need to hide now. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. You're a grown man, you're a grown woman. Just say, I ain't doing it, or I'm going to do it, right? Is there anything wrong with that, that being frank with New Orleans?
Well, I want to entertain the question, but the context of come out wherever you are is in what context? Is it in the context of people not doing what they're supposed to do, or what's the context?
Perhaps you missed me. I gave four scenarios.
Yeah, I did.
No problem. I'll just briefly recap. We're on for an hour and 30 minutes tonight. Where there are individuals who are suffering with undiagnosed or untreated mental health illnesses. And what we do is to make people that don't want to have to be victims of that the bad folks, because they say, come get it and do something. Right? We need to come out from behind the closet, hiding behind that. It's an issue that needs to be dealt with, especially in the Afro-American community. For decades, we've been ignoring certain things, and they haven't been addressed. Now our babies think it's normal for you to behave in a certain way, and people just accept that. But you know that ain't going to work. You know that ain't going to work. So that's one of them. And then I talked about people being economically and socially paralyzed because they've never learned the skill sets of budgeting and developing themselves such that they control the finances of their life, thus control the aspects of the quality of their life. And this is not just black people. Some white folks like that too, but most of the people I know, that's where many of us have found ourselves. Many of us have overcome that. We've done better, right? And we can do better. And the idea is to be a model to a young folks. Then the other two is being blind, either intentionally blind because you don't want to know the truth, or by condition and circumstance because you never know. Then lastly, young folks looking for love in all the wrong places. I'm sure, what was the name of that group that sang that song, Pastor Waller? Olivia was trying to go to her grandmama's house, and she wound up
Turned
out.
Yes, sir. The whispers, brother, they're saying that.
You know what to say to me. You know what to say. So New Orleans, that's where we are, man. That's where we are. And when I talk about coming out, whoever, it don't matter who you are. Dockery, come out, Dockery. If you hadn't, come on out. Stand up and be heard. Be seen. Be respected. You want to respond to that, New Orleans?
I want to apply that clarion call to people in our demographic group throughout America that have resources, that have skills, that can command audiences, that can put together networks, that can raise money.
Yes, sir.
Come out,
yes, sir.
Whoever you are. See, because we have people with these resources, with the skills. Let me give you an example. We have people who have been able to reach to what is called the top level of corporate America. But you see, the problem, Rev, and you know this, when we get there and we sit on those boards, we feel grateful to white people for letting us there. And so we don't want to rock the boat. And so we just go along to get along because we are just satisfied with the prestige and the status of having achieved a certain level in professions where we are given credibility in the community. But we have that element that can develop what I call or lead the way to develop a foundation of networks to reach the masses of the people. Remember, the challenge has always been in our demographic group is the talented tent and the masses. And W.B. Du Bois, you know, he initially in the early part of his development, he advocated the concept of the talented tent. That is the most brilliant, brightest, educated people of the Negro race to be leaders. But this is what he learned in subsequent years. He learned that they also were the most cowardly element of the
group.
And he changed his mind. He backed off from promoting the concept of the talented tent. And then you have the masses. See, there's a struggle for command of the masses' attention. And so, for example, I was looking at this story where they're pressuring, when I say they, the corporate media and some high influential people are pressuring LeBron James to give a statement to the black community to take the vaccine. Well, LeBron James' statement was, that's a personal decision that I discussed with my family, and that's why I leave it there. So people want to use LeBron James' connection with the masses in an attempt to control the masses through a figure that they, you know, would believe in. So that's always what they're telling. So I apply that concept to the people that we might consider the talented tent today in 2021.
And I think that's well stated. I believe that's the point that's well made. Whoever you are, that's why I say whoever. It don't matter who you are. You understand what I'm saying? Especially if you believe that people should look for you, for example, and that they should cater to your thoughts, your ideas, or your practice. Come on. Don't be mad. What do you think about 3661? He made some interesting points there. The point that he was talking about in particular, not just LeBron James but others, the expectation is you're supposed to be our mouthpiece, our poster child, so we can advance our agenda. Now, here's the conflict, though, 3661, before you answer. LeBron already He was already bald, and so from the get go, yeah, he already knee deep in it. So I guess he's going to take a stand now. That may hurt him a little bit. I don't know. What do you think, Senator?
I understand the brother's point. I agree wholeheartedly. But interesting about it, you talk about mental health and how it all kind of jives together. Mental health is nothing but a chemical imbalance, and that can happen in many different ways. A lot of people feel like they need to self-medicate, and it causes them to start thinking differently about different things. I think there's a huge problem when we as people have to look for other people to be our guide. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing. I think people can be good, very good contributors to people's lives.
Okay.
But like the brother said, W.E.B. Du Bois was wise in realizing that 10 people who don't know me can't set me up for success if they don't first know what I need to be successful.
Wow.
You have no clue on how to help me. And I've learned from a lot of people, and especially learning with working with people, that the biggest problem that people have in terms of being helped is no one is listening to them about what they need help with. They're too busy thinking for them, which causes a big breakdown in anybody being successful in terms of meeting a particular goal in life. So I agree with the brother. It's pretty interesting that it's like that, but it only makes sense because I think we're controlled as a people by politics. I guess you're fighting against Democratic and Republican. We're controlled by sexism. Men and women fighting for their positions. It's rough, man. It's rough. And it's all trickling down to the young people that we say we want. They the future. Good luck with that, man.
Come on out, whoever you are. Go ahead, Brother Warren. You were going to say something.
Wow. I just wanted to clarify. My understanding, LeBron James has taken stands in the community. I think that the point that I learned yesterday was that because he has been active in the community, give him the respect to be private with his family on this issue as relates to the vaccine. And so it just looks suspicious when the media makes it an issue. And this other guy, this black guy on ESPN, comes out with a statement. Steven something is his name, and trying to pressure LeBron James. I just use that as an example of how there is a struggle to control the minds of the masses, because the other night, Rev, you did a show called When the Sleeping Giant Awakens. And so the masses of black people, there is a fear of the masses of black people awakening, okay? And so the role of a lot of the talented tent, unfortunately, has been to use them to mislead and misdirect the masses away from being awoke, And so I just use that how LeBron James being an athlete, how in the athletic field of existence, you have in every field of existence, there are people that are looked upon to be used to persuade the masses to go in whatever direction, the rulers, the real rulers, want us to go.
Well, that's a good point. And I was going to, as I was listening to both your comments and Pastor jumping in and trying to get ready, I was thinking about leadership. LeBron is not the only one who was given his notoriety, his status through the media, right? Even there are other people in other forms of entertainment, certain preachers, certain politicians, okay? If it wasn't for the media contriving an importance for them and publicizing that. Nobody will know who they are, okay? And it speaks about leadership. We're always talking about leadership in the, quote, black community, end quote, okay? But the truth of the matter is authentic leadership is something that nobody can give you. But you can assume a title that they put on you, whether you really live up to it or not. You follow what I'm saying? And I think when LeBron and others find themselves, it was interesting a few years ago, Charles Barkley said, look, I ain't nobody's parent. I ain't their daddy and their mama. Their daddy and mama need to be teachers. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I made my money playing basketball. That's how I made mine. That's my money. Their parents need to teach them. I don't have to be their role model. And it's interesting that that still hadn't ended. Here we are in 2021, and young brother James, King James, look, the media said, we're going to put our money into you now. You're going to have to perform. But we got an agenda for you. Pastor, what do you think about that?
Well, what I feel about it, being a role model, you don't even have to try to be a role model. You can be one.
Okay.
It's just about following the pattern of certain people. You know what I mean? A priest is a role model.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, right, wrong, up and down. So,
we got a little static. Hey, Pastor, I know you're out and about. We got a little static in your background. We can't hear you too clear. If you could speak in your phone like that for us. I know you're working.
Now, it might be somebody else, I think, because I'm right here. I'm not outside. I'm basically inside.
Okay.
And, yeah, I don't know where it's coming from. But
if the other caller maybe would check your back to see if you're getting any feedback from your back, I appreciate it. I'm sorry, Pat.
Yes, I need to hear it myself.
Okay.
Yeah, I hear it.
All right, go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, I was saying that, you know, watching the guys in the streets, you know, even though I was playing with the ball, but still I was watching guys, as I've often said, you know, standing on the corner. They were role models, whether they liked it or not.
Okay.
You're going to be
okay.
A given on that. You know,
mm-hmm.
And that
mm-hmm.
what I ended up doing, I was following some of the things I was seeing in them because I thought they were leading by a great example. And it didn't look like it was dull or without joy. It just seemed like it was a lot of fun that they were having. So, you know, if a person don't want to be a role model and, you know, he's very good at what he – and I'm sure, you know, he played ball really good. Barkley did, and, you know, and somebody looking at how he played, I mean, I can't help but want to play like him because he can show go. And then come around and say that I'm not no role model, you know, that kind of makes that person who was looking at him, you know, in a positive way to say, what? You mean tell me you're not? And I've been watching you, and I sure want to be like you. So it's pretty tough, man. You never know who's watching you. And that's the thing, because you can easily be lured into a way of life. And then on the positive side as well, it's people that's doing productive things, and, you know, it's just evidence that that's available as well. So I just thank God for giving me a chance to recognize that I'm going to be a good example or a bad one. I'm going to be one or the other. And I'm okay with that.
Go ahead.
I was told that no matter what the game is, somebody's always watching.
Somebody's always there. Yes, sir. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanna go back to something that Mr. Warren said, because it was pivotal to this discussion about coming out whoever you are. And I've often said this, Mr. Warren, myself. In fact, my late advisor, Dr. Rivers Mitchell from Fisk University, who was head of the sociology department, the history and sociology, he said to me, Doctor, you know, you're not gonna always have a lot of friends with those statements you make. Because I was talking about this tendency to hide behind the concept of talented 10. And that's code word for we're better than everybody else. And they should give us all respect and due credence. Well, how do you get that? Don't you earn that? But Warren, don't you have to earn that respect from others? Because I wonder if the goal of educating young people today is for them to assume that same mentality, or should they literally be servants, public servants that are working and earning their respect by their sweat and tears in serving other people? What do you think about that, Brother Warren?
Well, I think that when you look at the hustle in the community that we have for young people to be matriculated in high society is the electoral politics game. So, for example, let's say a young person goes to college. They're studying political science in the undergrad. They want to go to law school and be a lawyer. So they go to law school. They get an intern. So the black people that they come across are the black people who may be lawyers and politicians. They may work on somebody's campaign, yada, 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 so on and so forth. And then they learn. They learn from that group how to act, how to talk, how to be phony, how to hustle the people. This seems to be basically what, so it's not so much that's what the young people aspire. That's the teachers that the young people are going to have who are already doing it to bring them in. So I use the electoral politics game because that seems to be the thing we most seem to be proud of, you know, haven't gotten into since the passage of the Voting Rights Act. So looking at school board members, you're looking at state reps, state senators, congresspersons, so on and so forth, that we tend to learn through the circle, the network, okay? Now, I'll say this. Now, the talented 10, I don't think we have a talented 10 today, because when you look at the time Du Bois was coming up, you had a big gap between those blacks who had gone to college, which were very few, and the masses of the black people have not. It's a little complex today, okay? So you have more blacks who've gone to college, and the majority of blacks who've gone to college are not bourgeois, talented, temp type people. They're hardworking people trying to make ends meet. Okay? But what you might can identify as a talented temp today is that group that are up in corporate America who are sitting on boards, who might be CEOs, and who might serve as advisors to people like Obama and Biden, you know, in the Democratic camp. Gallery Jarrett, for example, who I think was Senator Vernon Jordan that died recently. You know, those people are like way up there. But see, the way it is now, they're just really disconnected from the masses of the people. They're just like far, far disconnected. And so most of our young people, unless their families are part of that group, they're not going to get there. You see what I'm saying? They may get to a superficial level. They may get to a superficial level of a type of being very, very pseudo-talented thing. But I think what we need to do is just focus on how do we look at our space. Now, our space means wherever we are located. How do we look at that as a frontier and a reservoir of wealth, like other people who are not part of us do all over this country? Okay. I always use the example of immigrant groups who have established themselves comfortably in the ghettos, in the quote-unquote low-income neighborhoods with businesses. And we seem not to ourselves identify this as a source of expansion, frontier, and possibilities for ourselves. And there's a lot of psychological reasons that go with that. Okay, that is, we have an inferiority complex. We got to admit that our group overall has an inferiority complex. We're looking to be stroked and accepted by the dominant group. So much of our energy and sweat is to posture, so we can be accepted, we can be recognized, and our ego stroked. And that makes it difficult for us to be able to sit down together and concentrate on how we're going to at least move on our particular territory. I'm going to say this be quiet. We look at world history.
Okay.
All man has been a social being that identifies in groups, and those groups compete against each other for territory in space. So the African American demographic has territory. We don't recognize it. Other people recognize it. That's why they move among us and plop themselves among us to enrich themselves off of the disposable income we have. We do have disposable income and lots of it. And so we have not identified the fact that we have a territory, and our job is to defend our territory and not let others come in to exploit us and then kick us around the ground. So we look at what we consider traditional white people as the enemy. When we look at a lot of Arab groups, we look at a lot of Asian groups, they are on that immediate level in many respects have replaced the traditional white in terms of the exploiter and mistreating us on the ground.
Okay. You know, I'm going to go to 3661, but you made some interesting points there. I was thinking about two authors. These are researchers. I think both of them are deceased now. Nathan Hare, probably still, out of the University of California. He wrote a book entitled Black Anglo-Saxon. And his thesis aligned very much with what you were talking about, as well as E. Franklin Frazier, the black bourgeoisie, and it's based in the 70s, basically, as they looked at the progression of certain people who were struggling at first, and after integration and things of that nature, they made their bones in government and business and other places, and they began to separate themselves and classify themselves and create even classism within the Afro-American subculture. So very interesting point that you're making there. Come on out, whoever you are, and I'm going to put it on me first. If I'm hit, if I'm had, and I ain't telling the truth, come on out, doctor. Come on out. Let me fix my hair first. Let me comb my hair. Then I'll be right on out, doc. So 3661. Let me ask you this. You there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Why?
Yes, sir.
Why should a young man or a young woman give any ounce or a second of their time to an old person and listen to what they're talking about? Is there, in 2021 now, given everything that we've been seeing and talking about, there's a lot of distrust. Let's be honest about that, okay? Come on out. Let's be honest about that. From generation to generation, why should they even give a second of their attention today in light of all these things, 61?
First and foremost, I would say it would be very intelligent for them to do that.
Okay.
With age come wisdom.
We would assume, yes. We would assume that.
And some experience and understanding about things.
Okay.
Now, if I'm not suggesting every elder out here is being untrue to life, because I know plenty of elders in my life has been pretty straight up and honest with me about some things, about some things that guide me, and it only makes sense though, Reverend, that young folks should counsel from the elders. Just by the theory of it. Now, on the flip side of that, I do understand how a lot of elders is out of pocket.
Mm.
I get that, but just to be able to demonstrate some humility and even some discipline,
mm-hmm.
it's a very powerful thing for young people. And unfortunately, they can't even display humility and discipline.
Right.
And listen, even if they know the person is shucking and jabbing, just the idea, the nature of the law of respecting your elders teaches you discipline and humility.
May I lean? Hold your thought. You hitting something, man. You hit me in the head, man. Can I lean on you for a second, though? You said that the elders out of pocket. Can we justifiably call them elders? Is just because you've been around a number of chronological years, does that qualify you as an elder?
Only in age.
Okay. All right. Cause, you know,
only in age it qualifies you as an elder. Because there are some mentally challenged people that are very old, but chronologically they would be probably on the level of a 12, 13-year-old.
Right.
I recognize that. But also I do recognize as well, though, that there is a process to life.
Okay.
And one of those processes is to respect your elders.
That's right. That's a matter of principle. What you're saying. That's a matter of principle.
Correct. And you can't run from that.
No.
If they're out of pocket or not, you can't run from that.
But you know that. Come on now, big brother. You know that the issue here now is they're supposed to be able to look to, I'm going to say us, collectively, they're supposed to be, that's ideal that they should be able to look to us. But don't we know, gentlemen, don't we know that unfortunately, collectively speaking, we have failed to present ourselves as a viable platform for them, such that now many of them are just, there's a saying on the street, I'm going to get it the way I live. I don't care nothing about no order, no structure, no discipline. You know what I mean? It ain't about nobody but me. It's all about me. That's selfish mentality. That's what drives that rebellion. So, gentlemen, isn't it true Brother One, I'm going to agree with you. Before we beat up the young people, maybe we should start slapping ourselves in the head, Brother One, and correcting some things.
Well, I agree with you, but I think that should be done in order. I don't think the young people should see you smacking yourself in the head. You should be able to come to some kind of understanding in life and say that I messed up, and because I messed up, this could put them in a position to make the same mistake.
That's correct. Yes, absolutely. We're in agreement. But, Brother, what do you think about that? That maybe we need to examine ourselves. We need to do the Michael Jackson thing. Look at the man or the woman in the mirror. And then ask ourselves where we need to correct.
I think that we have yet as a demographic group. I like to use that term, demographic group, because we are diverse. We have a variety of experiences. We have different educational attainment levels. This is a very important point I'm about to make. The most practical thing we should do is see ourselves as a nation within a nation. And if we look at ourselves as a nation within a nation, you could use statistical comparisons that nations use with other nations to determine their viability or their productivity. So, for example, if you take the African-American nation and you say, well, the African-American nation has disposable income, but it doesn't have an economic infrastructure, what's happening here? And then you see, well, okay, we see that in this country, this nation of African-Americans, they have all of their income going outside of the nation. There's no investment coming back in to develop economic infrastructure, to employ themselves, to develop the things that they need to withstand a nation. See, when you start analyzing like that, then you can come to practical solutions to address the various social breakdowns that are identified. Now, I'm going to use this example for you to show just how bad it might be among the elements that we think should be the leaders. Now, my family is complex. I think my extended family, my family's been here in Louisiana for nearly over 300 years. So my family description is complex. Now, my household, where I come up as a kid, would have been described as a working class / middle class. But I have cousins who are part of the black bourgeoisie. So let me give you an example. You're familiar with a denomination called the Congregational Church.
Okay.
The
yes,
Congregational Church is the denomination that supported, I believe, Dillard and Fisk. Okay? The Congregational Church was a New England church that was an abolitionist denomination. They advocated to end slavery. So a lot of elite, well-educated blacks are members of that church. I mean, they're snobs. I mean, they're real snobs in that type of church. You don't even say amen in those churches. So here in New Orleans, we had two black congregational churches. One is called Central Congregational Church. That's where Andrew Young comes out of. Another beach. And then you had the white congregational church. So Hurricane Katrina comes, and it does some damage. The Central Congregational Church owned pretty much a whole block in downtown New Orleans. They had the first black daycare center since the early 1900s. They had a senior citizen home and a building. All right. The white Congregational Church, about 10 miles or 8 miles up, they didn't even really have a parking space to park. So Hurricane Katrina hit, so the black church has some damages to it. So somebody comes up with the idea, why don't they hold services at the white congregational church? They start doing it. Some of the white members suggest the idea, hey, why don't we merge? So some of them were my cousins in there. The black dummies, if I call them, they went along with that. So what they had to do was decommission the black church, decommission the white church, and create a new name, St. Matthew's Central Congregational Church. Now, guess what started happening? They started selling the assets of the black church.
Of course.
They sold the nursing home. And then when the blacks who went along with this found out what was going on, it was too late. They tried to sue.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the black church had more than the white church.
Right.
But the white people conned them to be a part as one, and who loses all their assets? The black church, the central congregational. Now, these are supposed to be the most educated, highfalutin black people in America and the de facto leaders of the race. If they can't maneuver out of being conned, Reverend Dockery, then what did they say about the possibility, maybe, of the rest of us?
You know, that's interesting. I was having a rather in-depth conversation with the members of my staff and my agency, and we were just talking about current issues and that sort of thing. And that was the point that arose. And that is, to your point, I think, if those people who were supposed to represent the Negro or black intelligentsia, right? If they can't be trusted, if they're not on point, as 61 said, and if they're unreliable, then don't others have a right to create their own path or own identity? You understand what I'm saying? But the risk there is that you lose a sense of powerful connection to the historic advances and gains of the Afro-American subculture when you start splitting and dividing. You follow what I'm saying, Brother Warren? That's the danger.
Right, but you see, the lesson in that too, Reb, is this. Other people see your value. They see your work while they have told you that you ain't worth nothing. We have internalized the myth of our negativity. But you see, what's going on in religion in America is a lot of the white mainline denominations are dying and they're losing money. but they see the vitality. They see the vitality in the black churches. They want that money. They want that black people's money. And so since many of us have low self-esteem and we really, really want to be accepted and recognized by these people, we're willing to give up the inheritance. We're willing to give up the inheritance because those black people over 107 years built up that congregation church, bought, owned that, pretty much owned that whole block. And then you give it up off of a vision that you're going to be one with people. People use the people use Christianity to con them out of what they needed to be what? To have balance in a what? Capitalist society. You lost your property. It got auctioned off, and all that money is going to build up the white church.
My God.
This is how the thinking is among many, and that's where the miseducation of the Negro come from Carter G. Woodson, that he was really getting on that group of black people. But our group, but our demographic is very diverse. You have people willing to solve, to work to solve problems from the low income level to the middle to the upper. It's just that we have to put the networks in place to get those things moving off the ground. And those who don't want to be a part of it, just let them go their way.
Brother Warren, I'm going to go to 61, but my whole premise is when everybody come out and show who they are, we can separate the wheat from the tare. And that's the problem. You got folk hiding and playing games. They don't want nobody to really see who they are. See, let me go to 61. 61, what were you going to say? You were going to say something there. I hope you didn't know what you thought there.
I find it interesting with listening in that just by the nature of our conversation, it demeans the people that's really suffering. And I say that in a sense of the brother was talking about corporate America, and it sounds like he rate them as some kind of success of being on top. That don't necessarily mean you're on top, because you know, you're in corporate America. It don't necessarily mean you made it in life because you become the president of the United States. Don't necessarily mean you made it. You made it in life because you're a doctor, or you know, those are good accolades and those are great professions.
Okay.
But when we start being able to see the value of life in ourselves.
Mm.
Then we can make the determination who I'm not going to listen to that person because what they're saying not making sense to me. You can actually use my father. He wasn't the richest person in the world, but he knew how to turn a dollar. If it's about economics. We so trapped up in the structure or the infrastructure of the world where we lose sight of what's really going on, man.
I see. Well, you know, when we come out, Pastor Waller, when everybody come out from the crevices, from the wall, you know, I hear Pastor Waller, I've heard many preachers say in their prayer, Lord, hide me behind the cross. Something about that just didn't jive in my Pastor Waller. Hide me behind. Now, what you hiding behind the cross for? What you mean? No, come on. Come on out, bro. Whoever you are, what you hiding for? What do you think about that, Pastor? Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Pastor, what do you think about that? Hide me behind the cross.
Yeah, man, it's a secret place to, you know, where you can have a decent way of saying hide me, you know, and then it's time to come out. You know, you got to make sure you're prepared to come out, you know, and that's the reason why I appreciate being able to trust in someone, know how to bring me out not so fast, because there's so much that I'm trying to, that if I can't get it all done at one time, I like for them to take it step by step. And so that happened to me.
Okay.
And when I was able to, when I was able to turn my life over, and I only talk about my experience because that's and it's valuable that I can pinpoint, you know, to say, yeah, it takes time sometimes. You know, some get there sooner than others, and but just know that when it's available to, it's like don't want to come out just looking like you, you got it going, and you know that that can happen too, and it happens a lot. But yet still, when it's time for the, you know, for the power to stand, you know, then you don't have the right tools. So, so when I deal with temptation, I'm glad I got the right tools, man. Because if I didn't have the right tools, oh man, I can't imagine, brother. Somebody come on out. Come on.
Okay.
You got to, you know.
Come on out and play. Come on out and play. Pastor, you know, a text came up in my conversation the other day, and that was 2 Corinthians 9:24, where, you know, you and I talked about this a lot. All run in a race. Everybody can get in. But only one can win. So what the text says, 6:1, is it admonished everybody in the race to run hard. I'm paraphrasing that. Run hard and do your best so that you can be that one that obtains the prize. Because everybody can get in there. Hey, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I'm just saying, man. I mean, getting in
the problem is the problem is, I think, Reverend and Pastor, is that we're too busy trying to hide. We're trying to hide behind blackness. We're trying to hide behind titles. We're trying to hide. Oh. We're trying to hide behind so many things. And what's interesting is that I remember as a kid in church, they would sing this song. If I cover my head, my feet will show. And if
David
I cover
said.
My feet, my head will show.
That's what David said. That's what the writer David said.
And if I would fly to the other part of that earth, I see that.
You'll find
you you can't hide.
There's no hiding place.
You can't hide.
Well, you're going to preach on them tonight, ain't you? I didn't know you were going to preach on them tonight, 61. Well, I mean, the reality is that there's not a big enough quilt, Pastor Wall and Brother Warren, to hide from reality. Come on out. Come on out, and come on out. Show yourself and be proud, and live within your own skin. I think you made a good point, though. Today, young people are learning that, and this is the neophytes of the bourgeoisie, if you will. They're learning that if you can use code words, and you can find causes and ideas that you can get behind, you don't have to be accountable. You don't have to work hard. Because you just hooked up. You got the hookup thing. You in the clique. See? And sadly enough, we see this in churches. We see cliques in churches.
Well, that's how it happens. That's how you know, you don't need an education, man. It's just somebody to put you right in there.
I mean, it's amazing, but go ahead. Who was that?
You're dealing with, you know, dealing with hiding. You know, I was thinking about these. Dealing with hiding, you know, some people are hiding, and you know, the Bible says about getting to the secret place, you know, hide according to his secret place. Now that's a good hide, you know.
Okay.
And that's the protection. I'm bringing all my troubles and everything because God is my refuge and strength. While I'm hiding, then he's giving me coverage. While I'm being strengthened, so when it's time for me to come out, then I can handle, as I said, you know, temptation. Because you're not equipped when you come out. That's
okay.
And I keep my experience with that. That's what I was saying earlier. So it's just a matter of, you know, you say hiding behind blackness. I think I heard my brother was saying, you know, hiding behind.
Don't focus.
Yeah, that's pretty tough right now. To know that you're dealing with it like that, and if you're not ready to come out, is what I'm saying. I'm just glad I was able to be patient, because if I come out too soon, it's gonna be tough. Yeah.
Hello. Yeah. Well, that's the point. Now, here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with having cultural pride and heritage.
Not at all.
Pride in your No. But when I hear people make the case that I have an excuse from accountability and responsibility, quote, because I'm black, end quote. No, wrong answer. You're misrepresenting what it means.
Reverend, can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure, go ahead.
I heard some from a young man that blew my mind. And what blew my mind about it is that this young man had looted and stole over $20,000 of stuff, worth of stuff here in Chicago.
But
because he was on the news with what's supposed to be a community advocate. Everybody's supposed to excuse that because he lived in poverty and he black. That's what I mean by hiding behind black.
Okay.
To your point,
that
don't excuse your behavior.
Now you're not saying that he should be castigated to the peripheries of society, but somebody should bring him.
Oh, I'm not saying that whatsoever. But I say if you commit a crime, you will punished for the crime.
That's what Robert Blake said. Don't do the crime if you can't do the crime. They don't want you. Y'all don't know about Beretta.
The problem is a lot of people ain't getting indicted for the crimes that they're really doing. I got a bunch of people and they ain't black.
Don't say it like that.
That should be indicted for crimes.
Say what? Okay. Wow. Well, so we're talking from the topic, come out, whoever you are. Come out of where? Stop hiding behind titles. Stop hiding behind affiliation with an organization or with a denomination or with a corporation. Stop hiding behind affiliation with a political organization. And be real yourself. This is the only way our babies are going to learn to trust that we are real, is they can see who we are. And I think I heard Brother 61 say that when you can be honest, when I can be honest enough to say, I slipped up, I messed up, you know. I shared the story, and we got about 11 minutes, just right briefly. I shared the story some time ago about how I was driving the church van, picked my children up from school, had money in my pocket, and did not, Pastor Waller, go fill the van up with gas. Well, I guess you know when we hit that hill, the thing ran out of gas. And fortunately, somebody said, and I had my son and my daughter. My son would never say anything. He would. My daughter, though, she running that mouth. Daddy, you got money? And you didn't go, what happened? Now, you know, I want to tell her, be quiet, little girl, but guess what? She earned, in a sense, now she didn't have to be disrespectful, which she didn't, but she asked some real good questions. What happened then? You've been driving this car all day. You know it needs gas, and you know you had to pick us up. Why are we walking to the gas station when you got money in your pocket and you could have stopped at the gas station before you came to get it? My point is, young folk have a right to respectfully, 61, respectfully, pose questions to us about our sincerity, right? And even about the things that we present to them that we say are good and profitable for recruiting. They got a right to ask questions. I'm not saying you should be disrespectful.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but what's funny about that is that would be the question you would ask her, because you know you sent out the house with money. How you run out of gas?
That's the ironic part
about it. To what you're saying, they ask reasonable questions,
right?
But we too busy trying to, you know, justify that you made a mistake. Well, shit, I done did well. You know,
it was when I looked at my son. While he wasn't gonna say nothing, he was nodding in agreement with her the whole time.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know what? I messed up. Like, We're going to do better next time. We're going to do better next time. Because, I mean, both of them. Like,
well, it's a teachable moment, though. It's
yeah,
a teachable
it
moment.
Sure was. Sure. But the point is that even though you're in a position of influence, of authority, and leadership, you have to know when to tap into
absolutely
the goals that are around you and acknowledge when you need to make some changes, make some adjustments. And you understand? And that's come on out. That's what I mean by come out. Your time
yes,
don't mean that. That's why somebody asked me, why don't you always call yourself a reverend or a doctor all the time? Because I generally don't. I just go by my name, what my mama told me my name was. You understand? And, that's my whole point. I appreciate my hard work and what we got, but that will make me who I am. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
I hope people can accept me as a fathead, good-looking guy, Brother Warren, first, and then it'll be easy for them to put those other things. that's my hope. That's my hope. But, yeah, it's about being real, and it's about being honest, especially in this present moment. In 2020, we have to reshape a lot of things. And Brother Warren, I think a lot of my brethren in the ministry are going to have a hard time trying to reconvince people to solely trust them in their what they say, you know, about God and trusting God because of some of the recent events. But we're going to get past that. I think we're going to eventually. Pastor Wallace, what you do with the clock, man? Seven minutes. I appreciate it. Great conversation. Let me go around and hear from everybody before we wrap our conversation up. Bro Warren, you laid some things on the floor that can't be contested. It can't be contested, I don't believe. If anyone does an honest examination of history and sociology, Afro-American history and sociology, you'd be lying if you said you wasn't telling the truth. So, final thought for us tonight.
Yeah, I just think that we need to, and nothing I'm saying is what I created. Others have said this before me. I'm just borrowing their thoughts and sharing them. We need to look at ourselves as a nation within a nation, and as nations approach the way to solve their problems, that's the way we look. You take, in other words, you take a stock of your nation. You do an inventory of your nation. You know, how many people in the African-American nation are educated, have professions? How many people in the African-American nation are unemployed? And then when you can look at yourself that way, your group, your collective group, because no matter how we want to look at it, you are part of a group, whether you want to be part of it or not. That's the way. That's the way civilization has always been that way. And so, and I have no doubt that our group is a very energetic group. It has great possibilities, and others know it. We don't know it. Others know it. And so, their job is to swarm around us and to suck the blood out of us and exploit us to keep themselves functional and alive.
Wow.
We're feasted upon by others for their survival while we're getting sucked like the juice out of an orange. And then when the day comes when you're no longer of any use of any kind, economic or what, that's when extermination starts.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Okay, brother. Wow, I got a headache now. That needs to give me an Alka-Seltzer or something, man. You just gave me a headache. So appreciate that. All right, 6-1, final thought for us tonight before we turn over to basketball, man.
I'm going to stand down after what that brother said. I'm a ride with that, man.
He dropped the bomb on me. He dropped the bomb.
Yeah. I'm going to put a gas mask on, man, trying to escape that, man.
Appreciate it. Thank you for joining us tonight. We appreciate you. We're going to get better. I'm going to send this link to the young men that we've been working with and encourage them to listen to the whole thing and share with us that there. Okay. All right. Well, appreciate you again, 61, for joining us tonight. Pastor Wallace, now, what you going to do with that?
Yes, sir.
Pastor Wallace, they done dropped like you still high. What you going to do with that, man?
Well, the only thing I can say is, man, I appreciate everybody who had a chance to put something out there for
right.
those who was able to hear and listen. But the main thing I would do with it is always keep God first, because I know that's the place that I can go with it, man, whether it's good,
okay.
it's good or bad, whether I like it or not. I can always
right.
go to him and say, he is my refuge. And say, he that dwelleth in the secret place of Most
okay.
High God shall abide under the shadow Almighty. And I have to remember that he is refuge and strength. And when I do that, brother, I think I can handle any situation that I deal with. Other than that, I can't handle what the brother said, you know. Man, it's been great, brother. It's on the same accord. The word of God says, well, there's two or three gathered together in his name, touching and agreeing, that he will be in the midst of us. So I want to suggest that it'd be a beautiful thing to keep him first, and everything else will fall in order, man. You know, why would I say that? The word of God said, according to what I've learned, seek ye first the kingdom, and his righteousness, and all these
and
things
what?
Shall be unto you. So that's the reason why I said keep him first, and watch him do for us what we are unable and refuse to do for ourselves. I yield back to you on that note.
Hey, man, we'll be back next Tuesday for another episode of Talk Straight. And we appreciate you guys. I hope y'all been listening to Kay. She's been dropping some information on our show on Tuesday night, Talking with Kay on blogtalkradio.com. Check it out sometime. Check out something. But what we'll do is we'll start our show a few minutes later so we can go over there and visit and see what, dip in on it, see what she's talking about, see what she's talking about. But we appreciate you guys, and we'll see y'all on next Tuesday. I've been down in the water, soul been baptized. Now my soul is clean, and I'm satisfied.
Yeah.